Please be seated. I learned from my mother how to love the living, how to have plenty of vases on hand in case you have to rush to the hospital with peonies cut from the lawn, black ants still stuck to the buds. I learned to save jars large enough to hold fruit salad for a whole grieving household, to cube hand-canned pears and peaches, to slice through maroon-skinned grapes and flick out the seeds with a knife point. I learned to attend viewings even if I didn't know the deceased, to press the moist hands of the living, to look in their eyes and offer sympathy, as though I understood loss even then. I learned that whatever we say means nothing. What anyone will remember is that we came. I learned to believe I had the power to ease painful experiences materially, like an angel. Like a doctor, I learned to create from another's suffering my own usefulness. And once you know how to do this, you can never refuse. To every house you enter, you must offer healing. A chocolate cake you baked yourself, the blessing of your voice, your chaste touch. Julia Kasdorf's poem, What I Learned from My Mother, illustrates what it looks like to put Jesus's words into action. She credits her mother with teaching her not to be served, but to serve. I must admit, Kasdorf's tribute to her mother stirs this mother's hope for my own child and this priest's hope for all of our children. How early our children learn the importance of being first, fastest, smartest, best. How easy it would be for them to build a life centered around themselves, their wants, their desires. How easy it is for all of us. Like James and John, who asked Jesus for seats of glory, it is all too human an instinct to want the best seats in the house. And while we might want to stand at a safe distance from the sons of Zebedee, feeling a bit embarrassed of and judgmental of these cherished disciples, the fact is, we're not so different from them. Perhaps we're not quite as upfront about our self-centered yearnings, but many of us spend much of our lives scheming for privileged positions. We want the top job with the comfortable salary. We want the house in the best neighborhood. We want our children at the top of their class. And though we might not make the outlandish request out loud, our hearts covet the best of the lot. We seem to have a little Zebedee in our DNA. Ironically, the sons of Zebedee's request for the power position follows Jesus's illustration of what the true power of God looks like. Jesus has just foretold for the third time in the Gospel of Mark that the Son of Man must suffer condemnation, humiliation, and death. This time, like every other, the disciples as a group misunderstand the self-sacrificial service Jesus must undertake in order to share God's life-giving grace with others, with the world. And they reject the implications that his self-sacrifice has on them, his followers. And so Jesus responds to his disciples for the third time, God bless him, with the teaching about what true discipleship looks like. Whoever wants to be great must become a servant. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. How hard this is to hear. How costly. How seemingly impossible. Perhaps afraid of the cost such self-sacrifice will have on their lives, James and John cling all the more to the promise of security. Maybe they're not power hungry, but rather acting quite naturally out of their fears. Perhaps they're not so different from us. And so Jesus assures them, assures us, the cup I drink, you will drink, and you will share in my baptism. With these words, these images of table and font, Jesus reminds us of the very path we will take to follow him into self-giving service. In baptism, we promise with God's help, to take the cross upon ourselves. In fact, we literally bear the mark of the cross upon our foreheads. We bear this cross as a promise to enter into one another's suffering for the sake of salvation. Seeking and serving Christ in all persons, striving for justice and peace among all people, sharing the bread and cup at the table, we are strengthened to literally become what we eat. The body of Christ blessed, broken, and given away that others might know the life-giving grace of God. We don't move beyond our fears and our self-serving quest for security alone, without intention. We move beyond self-serving fear to self-giving love by plunging ourselves into the life-giving waters, by binding ourselves to the body of Christ. And by creating safe and supportive spaces for our children and youth to do the same. Little by little, through a lifetime of practicing our faith, we learn to share God's life-giving grace through our self-giving love to others. Julia Kasdorf, today's poet, learned this self-giving love from her mother's intentional example. And she lived this out in her close-knit Mennonite community of faith. She learned to create from another's suffering her own usefulness. And she declared that once you know how to do this, you can never refuse. For Julia, sharing God's life-giving grace to others in self-giving love looked like vases of peonies, jars full of fruit salad, enough for a whole grieving household. showing up to comfort the grieving with the chocolate cake she baked herself, the blessing of her voice, and her chaste touch. What shape does your self-giving love take? What does it look like for you to spread God's life-giving grace to others?